Hey guys, Tony Schiavone here, making chicken salad. That's sure gonna put some butts in seats.
Here I was, blaming AEW for feeding you chicken shit, knowing you mindless millennials would be eating it up as if it were chicken salad, when it's really been your fault all along.
Make chicken salad out of chicken shit. People is as people does, that's all there is to it. Put a square peg in a round hole, just never seems to fit.
This is Bianca Belair.
Hey, this is Kevin Owens.
Hey, it's Seth freaking Rollins.
It is the man, Becky Lynch.
It's Rhea Ripley here, and you're listening to Wrestle Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to another special episode of Making Chicken Salad here on Wrestle Radio Australia, where we talk about everything going on around the world of wrestling. My name is Lachlan Albert, and I am joined by the best manager ever, Todd Eastman. Todd, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. And joined by the brain behind WrestleBrainia, Jeff Setti. Jeff, how you doing, mate?
I'm very good. Thank you very much, Lachlan. It's a great day today, actually. We had a wonderful show, and thank you both for being a part of it. The audience had a lot of fun, and it was great to have you boys up there on stage with the WrestleBrainia faithful.
It was excellent to be a part of WrestleBrainia today as part of StarCast Australia in Ballarat. Look, I should mention it is just after midnight as we record this. So
nearly 1 o'clock.
Nearly 1 o'clock?
Yeah.
I can read time. I was trying to read your phone upside down and I thought it's better. That's a 51, not a 15. Oh boy.
Yeah.
We're already there. Look, the reason that we are recording at almost 1 a.m. is because we have just gotten back from seeing OPW presenting Bret Hart's Australian Stampede. This was the second big night of wrestling at StarCast Down Under. Last night had the Her Show, which was the women's wrestling. This was the guys having their turn. Overall thoughts before we jump in. There's a couple of things I wanted to mention before we start breaking down match by match. Overall, I thought this was a more consistent card than last night's. I think that match to match, I don't think there was anything less than good. The worst matches on this card were good matches.
Mm.
I had a bit of a problem with the pacing, not in terms of match sequencing, which I think was quite well done, but in terms of where the intermission was placed. This was quite a big show in terms of number of matches, and there were only two matches after the intermission. Everything else was before the intermission, which meant that I think a lot of people were losing steam going into the end of the first half, and it led to some matches getting less of a reception than I think they should have. Todd, have you got any overall thoughts on this one?
Yeah, no, like I agree completely with that, with you there. Like before we got home, we stopped off and had something to eat. And that was a question that Jeff asked me. He's like, what would have you changed about the card? I said, I just would have moved the intermission forward to give the fans a bit of a break, because they basically watched the full card, then went out for 15 minutes and come back and, oh, here's two more matches. That's kind of how it felt.
Yeah, I can, you and I concur. Yes, we disagreed where the intermission would be, but we both agreed that it would have been earlier in the night. Yeah, you're probably right. It was probably a more consistent show. I did like the main event of last night a little more, probably because Delta was in it, and listeners will know how much we enjoy Delta's work. But yeah, look, a really entertaining and fun show. I mean, there were probably about four matches in there that could have been main events pretty much at any show in the country, and you'd have been quite happy to see them. But the main event itself was really good. And, I think that just a reshuffling of matches or bringing that intermission forward would have been a work. I was also a little frustrated, to not – maybe we missed it. Maybe it was an on-screen – presentation, but there was no firm welcome to country. I think it's always important to do that.
Yeah, absolutely, especially when the welcome to country from last night's show was so strong.
Brilliant.
To not have it tonight felt a bit strange, especially when they had everyone stand for the Australian national anthem, which is not something we typically see on wrestling cards here, though internationally, and I think with a lot of North American guests, that's something that's more common there.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if maybe when you've got people like Eric Bischoff and
Bret Hart,
thank you, involved in the organization of this card, maybe they just naturally throw the anthem in there at the start, and that's been gone with, rather than going, hang on, should this be changed to an acknowledgement or a welcome to country?
Do you think, and I have no idea, and I'm not defending or anything like that, do you think maybe that they think that doing it on the first night sort of cover them for the, say, festival?
Well, no, because if you're doing two different shows, you still need to do a welcome to country. It would be the same as if we get up on our first show of the comedy festival, do a welcome to country and go, well, that's job done. You know,
I understand what you're saying, but what I'm saying is because it's back-to-back nights, it's not exactly like yours where you do the comedy festival back-to-back weeks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
I'm not attacking.
No, I know.
I think if you do a show, every time you do a show, you should do a welcome to country. Whether it's the next day, the next week, the next month, the next year, do a welcome to country.
I agree, but I also do think what Todd said may be correct, that the organization of the show went, well, that's been covered on night one, so we don't need to do it on night two. Sure. That may have been why that decision was made.
Because I know they've been very sensitive on that, because you, and it'll come out sometime next week, you talked with Erica Reed.
Yeah,
And she took a few of the actual roster out to a smoking ceremony. The thing, so I know they're very...
And as they should be. Like, as they should be, as Lachlan will tell you, I was sitting next to an American visitor, and I was explaining to him the relevancy of the Welcome to Country and how it's important in 2024 and absolutely continues to this day. You're possibly right. It possibly was a case of, well, we've done it this evening. We have been welcomed to the country. We've welcomed the elders.
Either way, look, that's what happened at the start of the show. We didn't get an acknowledgement or a welcome, but we did get the national anthem.
Sure.
But let's kick into talking about the wrestling. There was a dark match to open the show because this was going out as part of Triller. So if you want to catch Bret Hart Presents Australian Stampede, I believe you will be able to find that on Triller.
Tomorrow
sounds right to me.
I'll double check while you're doing
that. But there was a dark match just for those in attendance for the Slam Pro Wrestling Heavyweight Championship. Luke Watts defending against Dan Archer. Dan not managing to get it done tonight. Luke Watts retaining his Slam Heavyweight Championship. And I thought this was fun for a dark match. We saw in the ACT in Canberra, when both Jeff and I were down for Slam, saw Luke Watts win that title. And Dan Archer also put on a great performance on that show, as well as both of those guys being on WrestleBrania the night before. So this was one that I know Jeff definitely would have had a bit of a personal attachment to.
Yes,
but I especially think Dan Archer is a really great talent and someone who is definitely, I guess, underrepresented in the conversation of Australian wrestlers.
I mean, Dan wrestled Robbie
at the Slam Show, yeah.
The Slam Show, and it was a tricky match, but I mean, that's Robbie. But nonetheless, I think Dan is a great talent, and it was kind of nice to see him wrestle a slightly different style. Luke Watts, the Hope from the Top Rope, is a lot of fun to watch. You know, he's got this real 80s shtick going on there with the bleached hair and the teeth and everything else. But he's great to watch and a very funny man. I thought this was a nice little warm-up match, really.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've got a question though, because maybe I missed it. Did he actually ever come off the top rope?
I don't think so.
I don't think he did in this match.
So where was my hope?
You were left
was
hopeless.
Was I hoping he'd come off the top rope eventually?
Well, I mean, you're hopeless anyway, so.
Classic Jeff. All right, moving along. The show was opened by Moose, who cut a heel promo. This was actually building on a little bit of work that he did as part of the panels, where he talked about being in Wagga Wagga for the TNA shows or Impact shows as they were last year, and how much he disliked Wagga Wagga. And coming into this show, he played on that, saying that He had hoped Ballarat would be better, but it turns out this whole country just sucks, and decided that he wasn't going to wrestle Josh Alexander in the main event tonight. That match was off. Instead, he was going to beat up some Aussie from the back. And Brooksy answered the challenge of that and basically said, don't call me some loser. I'm Adam Brooks. And Eric Bischoff came out and changed the main event.
I'm back.
That's right. He was back. Main event was now Moose defending his TNA World Heavyweight Championship against the OPW champion, Brooksy. And this meant that while they went and prepared for a main event, now Josh Alexander didn't have an opponent, and also Mance Warner didn't have an opponent. So Eric Bischoff went ahead and put the two of them in a Ballarat brawl. No countouts, no disqualifications. That was pretty chaotic and ended with Josh Alexander coming out on top. What did you think of this one, Todd?
You forget that Eric Bischoff used karate.
He did use a little bit of karate.
Yeah, I liked it because it had plenty of plunder, as Dusty would have said. They did like a tombstone on a setup chair. There was a top rope suplex through two boards stacked on each other over some chairs. Then because the tables or the chairs or the doors or whatever they were didn't break, he got powerbombed, like Mance Warner got powerbombed consecutively through those tables by Josh Alexander. It was a good match. It was a good hard-hitting match. The only thing that I then didn't like about it, and I put that in inverted commas because I liked the match, is that it's not a match I would normally see Josh Alexander in, and not a match I would normally like to see Josh Alexander. I'd like to see Josh Alexander in more of a wrestling quote-unquote match. But that's like much of a muchness, because I still enjoyed it. I still thought it was really exciting, still really good.
Yeah, Jeff?
Yeah, look, I like this a lot. I think they both have such great charisma that, yeah, I would have preferred to have seen Josh Alexander in a catch-as-catch-can style classic, as you said, Todd.
Yeah. So like Damian Slater or someone.
Yeah, Slater or even Royce, if Royce had been back a couple of months ago, you could easily see Josh against Royce, and it would be fantastic. But I think that this was a nice, fun way to get the audience on their feet and get them having a great time. And it worked. It really worked. The audience loved it. Mance did some fantastic hair work, and Jake is just wonderful to watch.
Yeah, it was really nice to see Josh Alexander. I do agree with you, Todd. I would have liked to have seen more of a wrestling match from JA, but I'm not going to complain about seeing these two, fun spots.
Such a like 80s Southern wrestling heel voice.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, yeah.
The Manson.
And seeing Tim Tams used as a weapon, like, that's just great.
Yeah.
You know?
I forgot about that. It was a Tim Tam shot to the nuts, or as I like to call it, a Tim Tam slam.
Fantastic. Moving on to six-man tag team action. Team India versus Team Australia. Team Australia represented by Emin Usman and the Natural Classics going up against Shanky Singh and the CWE Tag Team Champions JT Baba and Tufan Singh. This one had the celebrity ring announcer Bharat Sudarsan accompanying Team India. It depends if I got it right or not, I guess. accompanying Team India to the ring with a cricket bat. To be a heel manager, effectively delivering the cricket bat to Team India in the climax of this match. This one was a bit of chaos, as you expect from the six-man, and I think effectively what it did was put over Emin Usman as the little guy who could. It's always exciting to see someone the size of Shanky Singh in front of you in real life, and he's an absolute monster. And I think, everyone played their part in this match, and Emin looked like a star coming out of it. Do you agree, Jeff?
Yeah, completely. I think the match, you watch matches sometimes and you go, that match is about this person, or that match is about this person. This match was entirely about Emin Usman. Emin is fantastic to watch. I'm lucky enough to watch him on a regular basis. I acknowledge that we're spoiled down here. He was trained by Carlo Cannon, and he's just terrific to watch and a great guy. And as I've mentioned before, an MCW is the big baby face coming in, the small guy in peril, who interestingly in the show we're going to review on Thursday. He puts Lex over so strongly as a new champion, and here he is being, you know, and then he'll head off the Renegades and be out front of the ambush. So it's an interesting one.
Yeah, it's like I think the one thing about the match, they totally wasted an opportunity at the start there to have like the heels getting some heat on Emin and then tag Shanky in and then have us like a standoff between Emin and Shanky. Just that visual, yeah. I think it was a real missed opportunity they could have done.
Well, I wanted Emin to hit a belly to back suplex on the big fella. I think a lot Tyler Bate, that would have just, the pop would have been amazing. I mean, obviously physics dictates that that's probably impossible.
The two of them just look like different species. The size disparity is so huge.
Yeah. But like you said, Emin just showed out in this match just through his, like, he got himself over through selling and just comeback fire. And that's a real hard thing to do when you're not really getting a lot of offense in, but what you are getting in is showing that fire, which gets the fans behind you because you sell so well when you're getting beaten up. Which is what he does really, really well.
He does. Before I forget, I want to shout out the two referees tonight, because they there were two of them, and they were just alternating matches. And reffing matches is hard work.
Oh yeah.
And they both did outstanding jobs because you didn't notice them too much.
Absolutely. And obviously, we're not going to be able to comment on the, you know, commentary of these shows. I know that there was some classic MCW talent on air tonight, but obviously, seeing this live, we're just reviewing the live portion of the show. So we're also not going to know what the production looked like or any of that sort of stuff, other than what we were able to see in the building.
Yeah, well, we got to see that little monitor.
Yeah, because of where we were sitting, we could see some of it getting put together. But yeah, look, the next matchup was my match of the night. I feel like that might be concurred around the room. Kushida and Robbie Eagles put on a match that can only be described as Kushida versus Robbie Eagles. Excellent storytelling here with Robbie targeting the knee, Kushida targeting both the left leg and arm of Robbie, trying to negate the super backpack there. Very clever strategy there because that happens over the left. Yeah, these two are obviously both phenomenal. You don't get the language barrier as much when it comes to Robbie as he's used to working in New Japan. So that meant that Kushida could work without that limitation while in Australia. This match rocked.
Yeah, in my notes, I've literally written, the show has been good. This was class. Yeah. Because that's what it was. They wrestled in New Japan style and the crowd went with it because they just taught the crowd that this is what this style is.
Mm.
Enjoy it. And it's really hard when that's a style that these crowds really aren't accustomed to. And I know that there would have been a lot of dedicated wrestling fans at this show, but still, they were popping for like suplexes.
Yeah.
So they were an easy crowd to not really have to work really hard if they did want to. But like Robbie and Kushida just put on an absolute clinic. And I think I even posted in on our socials. Well, I had took a photo of those two in the ring, and I was like, I really don't think this crowd realized how lucky they are. They're seeing these two workers in this ring putting on this match.
Look, I agree with you completely. I think there's something quite phenomenal about Robbie 16 years into his career, at this stage of his career, performing with insert anyone to a standard that is comparable to any wrestler in the world.
Yeah.
You want to wrestle a scientific match, he'll wrestle you. You want to wrestle a hardcore match, he'll wrestle you. You want to wrestle a battle of chops and heavy hits, he will wrestle you. And tonight had an element of a couple of those and was absolutely satisfying. And yes, the audience went with it because the audience wanted to be taken on a different kind of journey. We were so incredibly lucky to see a match of that caliber in front of us that wasn't, you know, and the phrase is definitely going to be outmoded very soon, but wasn't a sports entertainment pretty cheesy match. No, it was a battle of two men who respected each other and fought to be the better man. And you can't complain about it.
No, absolutely not. The next match, I think, was maybe the best showcase of an Australian on this card.
Yeah.
Tommy Knight came out to be the first opponent for Shelton Benjamin's return to the ring. Shelton absolutely looking like $1 million, in such good shape, and just able to do things effortlessly, but made sure to give Tommy Knight a huge amount of offense. Shelton took an absolute battering in this match before a, you know, last-minute fiery comeback that looked incredible. I was really impressed with this match and really impressed with how giving Shelton was to Tommy Knight and just how much Tommy Knight took all of those opportunities to look like $1 million.
Yeah, that was like Shelton has not lost a step at all. He was amazing out there. He went out of his way. You could, like, when you've been watching wrestling for long enough, and if you've been around, like, around the traps in the business for long enough, you can tell when somebody is like going out of their way to help somebody out. And that's what I feel like Shelton did tonight. Shelton was like, I'm gonna make this kid, because he seems to be like, listens and wants to get better, and I want to help. And then, like, you could tell that in this match because of how giving he was with his, like, just the fact that, like, he's just like, attack me during my entrance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can do that. That's cool. We'll get some good heat for you. And you know, you don't realize how big Shelton Benjamin is until you see him in person. And then you see him up against someone like Tommy Knight. Like, Tommy Knight's a fucking monster. And Shelton looked as big as him, but in, yeah, like, just carved.
Tommy lost the match, but didn't lose a damn thing this tonight.
Absolutely.
You know, he is so phenomenally good. And Shelton, as you said, Todd, went as far as he could to put him over without him winning the match.
Yeah.
I really, really like seeing some of Shelton's signature spots, like the leap to the top turnbuckle before the suplex. Beautiful.
Just a power bomb. He power bombed Tommy Knight.
He power bombed Tommy, which was a lovely move.
With hang time,
yeah. He is, you know, the panel yesterday when we saw them, his sweet chin music, his dive into the sweet chin music was mentioned. And you watch it and you just go, this guy is absolute poetry to watch in the ring. It hasn't changed. He's getting into his 40s now and he's still phenomenally good. You know, I firmly believe, because I know that Triple H is clearly quite big on Shelton. He did lose to Shelton in a couple of matches on TV, which in a stage where Triple just wasn't losing to anyone. That's how much he thinks of Shelton. So I think that we'll see Shelton come back for one more run and then become a coach. And, you know, the future is in great hands when someone like Shelton's coming back. He did a lot for Cedric Alexander while he was in the WWE. I'm a big fan. And I thought this match was, while the match before was very good, this match brought, the crowd were starting to wane after Robbie Kushida because it felt like the intermission. But then they put this match on and this brought the crowd back into the room. So I think it was a really good effort from both men.
Absolutely. After this was a really exciting moment for a lot of people because Bret Hart came into the ring, and that's obviously going to be exciting for the fans. And that was to lead into the Stu Hart Heritage Championship match with Chris Masters defending against Mike Rallis. Mike Rallis having his first match outside of the WWE here for this title. I'm going to be honest, my expectations for this match were basement level. I like both of these guys in theory. No, like,
I'm joking.
Catchphrase time for me. I was there for Bret Hart's Australian Stampede, not Bret Hart's North American Stampede.
Canadian Stampede.
Yeah, right. And that's what this was.
Yeah.
This was two guys from halfway across the world having a wrestling match that for a title that I'm not going to see defended very often. because I'm not going out of my way to watch Stampede, right? But these guys did, I think, a really good job of putting on a match that was not overly complicated, not overly showy, but got the crowd invested in a clear face heel dynamic. They wanted to see Chris Masters win. It looked like Riddick Moss was in control for the majority of the match. But what was that? Sorry?
Mike Rallis.
It looked like Mike Rallis, thank you, was in control for the majority of the match. But Masters managed to get the win with the Master Lock at the end for the crowd to be happy and for Brett to hand him that title. I think this was a good bit of work.
Yeah, it was they had a slow paced start, but this was really like it was a good finish, but it was really I wrote it was definitely a heavily influenced like older WWE style match where they worked a safe but snug sort of style, and they didn't go too fast and they didn't try and overwhelm the crowd with too much stuff. So it was a decent enough match.
Yeah, I like this. I thought that it was nice enough. I think that they suffered from the fact that a lot of the crowd was starting to vague out a little because the first half had already gone for about 90 to 100 minutes and the crowd were getting tired. But it was nice. It was lovely. The heel antics of Mike Rallis was slow in coming to the fore. He didn't rush into being a heel. They kind of played a face versus face dynamic for about the first 6 minutes of the match. And then he started to heal it up a little bit more and get that going really well. Perhaps, again, you know, they wanted a face versus face match, but the crowd weren't buying it. So they just, yep, let's do this. They're both so good to watch. They're both such pros. And Chris Masters looks fantastic. The long hair. Or Chris Adonis as he is in
yeah, I don't understand what they did because they were halfway through this show. They did a quick little promo with him where SoCal Val introduced him as the masterpiece Chris Masters, and then he called himself Chris Adonis during the promo. But then when he came out for the match, he was Chris Masters again.
Yeah, I got no idea.
Yeah,
but it was a lovely match. I really enjoyed this.
After this, we finally got our intermission, and then coming back from intermission, the OPW Tag Team Championships were on the line with the Pareja trying to defend their titles against the team of Edward Dusk, who is definitely not a vampire, and Gangrel. But he's a vampire warrior, in fact. He's fanging and banging.
Sorry, that's the way you said that. Definitely, he's fanging and banging.
He is fanging and banging. I don't know if you noticed.
Good gotcha. He's fanging and banging.
The champs did not manage to defend their titles. We had new OPW tag team champions in the form of Gangrel and Edward Dusk. I really like the team. I was shocked with how much Gangrel was able to do in the ring. I thought he was going to be much less mobile than he was.
Considering how he was walking during the autograph sessions and that during the day, I was like, well, he's looking rough. Then I realized, hang on, he's going to match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he managed to put on a performance. We love Edward Dusk. That's no secret. We talk often about how much we love Dusky. And obviously, the Pareja are fantastic at what they do. And again, if you've got the chance to see them live, do it. Don't delay. Because they are not going to last long here in Australia. But I was shocked that, you know, they would put the OPW title on Gangrel, confident enough that he's going to be able to come back to defend it, you know? So that's really exciting, and I'm very happy for Edward Dust to be able to say that he's held gold, especially in a tag team with, you know, a classic 90s vampire. Like, isn't that just so up Edward Dust's alley?
Yeah, I messaged him and I called him Edge.
Yeah.
Well done, Edge.
So. I like this a lot. There was a moment where Gangrel pulled off like a snap body slam, you know, like your Dustin Rhodes style snap, and it was beautiful. It was it was well taken by, I think, Eros, but it was so beautifully placed, and Gangrel really threw the body in. It was a nice match to watch, and the surprise was like, yeah, the player, because you know, the role they play varies on the territory they're in, but definitely played heels in this. And I thought, oh, yeah, the gold chain hit and Dusky will go down and get, 1, 2, 3, the match is over. But it was a pleasant surprise that it wasn't.
Yeah, Todd?
Yeah, I thought this was a and because I was sitting with Welshy when we were watching the show, and I was just commenting to him, like, this is just old school tag team wrestling psychology, and the crowd love it. Yeah. Because you don't have to overwork things, you don't have to overthink you don't have to overthink what you're doing to get those reactions out of the crowd. And that's something that the Pariah have learned now, and it's made them so much better as workers. That hang on, we don't have to do all this flippy shit all the time. Mm. We can do it, and we can do it when we need to do it. But I could do something where we just cut the ring off. I can distract the referee, or I can go over and attack the other tag team. He'll come in, and this crowd will be mad because we're double teaming this guy out against it, and that's half our job done. And they did this a lot in this match, and it worked to perfection. And that's what I love about it. I love when people work smarter and not harder.
And I will acknowledge that at this point, the crowd were quite tired.
Yeah.
So the fact that the crowd, they were so into this match, shows you how good Gangrel, particularly, you know, sitting in the street, in the corner, making sure, pounding on the turnbuckles, getting the crowd in. Just doing that old school work on keeping the crowd engaged was wonderful to see.
Absolutely. Now, I'm probably going to throw to Todd early talking about this main event, especially because of what you were saying just then about the semi-main. The main event had Moose successfully defend his TNA Heavyweight Championship against Adam Brooks. And this was a classic main event, Todd.
Yeah, you know, I said to you guys as we were walking out of the building or we were sort of mulling around, I was like, I think in this case, for this match, Moose taught Adam Brooks how to work a proper main, like proper A-level professional wrestling main event, not an independent wrestling main event. And that's what I felt like this match was. It was a proper, like you would see on TV, like a WWE level, like a TNA level, like pay-per-view main event. That this is the style. If you want to learn this style, if you want to be on this level, this is the match you work when you're working a main event, because that's what Moose is. He's a polished professional, like a multi-time TNA world champion. And Brooksy, because Brooksy is smart enough to go, hey, I can learn something off this guy if I don't have to do all my indie stuff, and I have to do that tip. I can just do this and be great. But I thought he was brilliant. I thought the match was good. They got the crowd behind him. When he fired up to do his little baby face fire, he did get to do a little bit of his indie stuff. But then it was done in the right places and at the right times. And I think Moose probably had a lot to do with that, going, okay, you don't have to do that here. We can do this little bit here. We'll give you a bit of fire. We'll fire up.
And I think that you know, indie style stuff does work really well when you've got that babyface fire portion. When it's like, oh, and here comes the heat. You know, here comes just what Brooksy can do. And you see him move like lightning and get up the turnbuckle and hit that swanton and all of that stuff. But I really think that the classic work from Moose made that work. The old school heat, flipping off the crowd, taking it nice and slow, and the little things like after taking the swanton to survive that, he didn't kick out. He just put his foot on the ropes at the last possible moment and survived that way. That's the pieces of work that made this like a real, true main event match, right? What did you think, Jeff?
I liked it a lot. I really, really liked the offense that Moose has, because it's not complex. He's not doing flying head scissors. And yeah, he's a big boy. But what he's doing, it's the old thing that Kevin Nash used to get accused of. Because someone, I think Cornette used to say, Kevin Nash only knows five moves. Nash got on his podcast. He was played that quote. He goes, yeah, but all of them fucking hurt. And Moose is the same. Moose is that kind of wrestler that he gets by having that incredible body and being real imposing. I liked it. I think that, you know, I think it was fun. More than a, like, yeah, it's a main event style match, but it was such fun.
And look, speaking of fun, I think this whole StarCast weekend so far has been an absolute blast. You know, we had some awesome stuff today where we managed to get some interviews with some of the women who performed in the Her Show last night, as well as that. I know Jeff and I had an awesome moment where we got to meet and get signatures from Bull Nakano, so that was pretty unreal. WrestleBrania obviously had all three of us as a part of it tonight, and that was really special. So this StarCast event has just been so cool.
Well, there also in the morning that we went to, because Jeff couldn't do it, he's busy doing Brainier stuff, we went and saw Eric Bischoff's thing, which was really, really good. It was fantastic. Wasn't what people are probably expecting. He didn't sit there for 90 minutes and rag on AEW, because that wasn't what that thing was about. So it was really interesting. There was a lot of stuff there that I hadn't heard him talk about before. And the Q&A portions was good, because not everyone asked about Tony Khan, not everyone asked about the security cameras, and some of the questions were really, really good. Like, I think the one that that was Nims asked from MCW asked him about, like, who do you think did more damage to double when they took over WCW more? Was it Russo when he took it over in like the late 2000s, or was it when Vince just bought it and what Vince did with it? And the way
even Jim Hurt.
Yeah. But the way Eric answered it, he's like, well, I think Russo did more damage to it than what Vince did, what I would have done if I'd have bought WWE.
Mm.
So I thought that was really interesting. Of course, he did have his say on.
He sure did.
On AEW. But it wasn't like, it was more constructive than I found, anyway, as someone that I found it was more constructive than it was destructive.
Absolutely. And he did give really detailed, insightful answers to every question that was asked as well. I thought it was a really excellent panel.
Even the question I asked, I sort of thought he was going to go one way, and he sort of went
with something entirely unexpected. Yeah. You go, you know, that's a really good point.
And while you guys were there, I do want to shout out JXT and his team from Relentless for doing such a phenomenal job this weekend. They set up the ring. They do a lot of the security. They keep the photo shoots moving. Everything like that has been great. Jim Edwards has been tremendous. Jim, really great work. And a big thanks. And I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but Jordan Grace and Jody Thread did my show this evening. And that was a thrill for me personally. And the audience loved it. If you're going to be in Melbourne, if you listen to this on Sunday morning, Sunday the 15th, in Melbourne, tonight we have BDE's Dave and a special guest going up against the ambush. Come along at 5:30 at the Catfish. But yeah, what a thrill to have Jordan and Jody on my show. Thank you both so much. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And if you are listening to this the day it goes up, you have one last chance to attend StarCast Australia in Ballarat. Make sure you get there. I know that Bret Hart is signing autographs from 9 a.m. sharp. If you want to get a handshake and a signature from Bret Hart,
I think it was like 9 a.m. to 11:45.
Yeah,
because then he's doing hard out at 11:45.
So, look, make sure you get along. If you are not listening to this as it comes out, make sure you follow OPW on Facebook, because they have been instrumental in putting on these shows. Make sure you follow StarCast, because if there is another event like this in Australia, you will not want to miss it.
And a huge, huge shout out to Cam Bale for all his work on this. Cam, you know, mate, you pulled this together really well. Thank you for the opportunity this afternoon. And we look forward to doing more with you in the future. And thank you so much, mate.
Is there anything else we need to mention before we get some sleep, boys?
No.
No, I think we're good. We're done. I can't wait till you guys sleep.
All righty.
Well, your chicken shit is this week, boys.
With that, on behalf of Jeff Setti and Todd Eastman, I've been Lachlan Albert. Till next time, have a good one.
Here I was, blaming AEW for feeding you chicken shit, knowing you mindless millennials would be eating it up as if it were chicken salad, when it's really been your fault all along.